This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And as the embryonic tables in the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two start to take shape, we salute the 100%ers as Reading, Bristol City and Luton, Ipswich, Lincoln and Hull and Cambridge and Port Vale all start to wonder if this might be their season. We won't list the clubs yet to get off the mark. Instead, we'll flesh out many of the key stories across the EFL, including, sadly, COVID retaking centre stage, and look ahead to the coming weekend on the official EFL podcast. Ita Karanka is back in business in English football after 18 months waiting patiently for another opportunity. On the 31st of July, the former Middlesbrough and Nottingham Forest manager became Birmingham City's sixth man in charge in the past 3.5 years. And I was reading an interview this morning, Ita. Talk about try to get to know the local fans. You've already got a Peaky Blinders cap. Is this true?
It's true. It was a really nice surprise from Steve, because everybody had told me that he's a really good Birmingham City supporter. And I think it was the second or the third day here at the club I received the present.
That's fantastic. This is Stephen Knight, who created the Peaky Blinders series. I mean, that is wonderful to kind of learn about local heritage, local history. Is that an important part of getting to know a new football club, Ita?
I think it's really important. I did in Middlesbrough. I was doing in Forest, because I think it's important to know the people from you are, because again, at the end, everybody is different. The culture, even the language is different here than in Middlesbrough, for example. And you know, you have to know how they think, how or what they want to be closer to them.
Yeah, just to be clear, Birmingham's probably moved on a little bit since the Shelby brothers in Peaky Blinders. Not everybody's like that these days. Now, listen, didn't you get a chance to take the Birmingham job a few years ago? But I think at the time your dad had just passed away and maybe circumstances weren't right?
Yeah, it was 3 years ago. And, you know, it didn't work. And, you know, as you said, my father had passed away 1 month or 3 weeks before. I wasn't at the right time. I wasn't ready to take the job, and we decided to not continue the conversations. And you know, football is football. The life is the life. And 3 years later, Birmingham appeared again, and the CEO appeared again, and I am more than happy to be here.
What is your hunger for English football? Why is it that after things finished in Middlesbrough, you stayed, got the Forest job, you've stayed again for 1.5 years? What is it about English football you find so fascinating and makes you so enthusiastic?
I said always that I missed to play here as a player, and when I had the chance to come here as a manager, I didn't have any doubt. And imagine when you arrive at a club like Middlesbrough and you leave everything that we lived there together. So taking the team in a good condition, and then the following year we were in Wembley losing the final, and the following year getting promotion and playing the Premier League. And you know, my family came here with me 5-6 years ago, and they've been in the school for a while. They have their friends here. And I said always that I like and I love this football. It's the football which I know, and I like it.
Are you a very different person to the person that arrived here all those years ago with Middlesbrough? Have you changed a lot as a person? Have you changed a lot as a coach?
As a person, I am the same. I don't know if good or bad, but I am the same, you know, because I have the education at home. I was really lucky, because a part of my education at home with my parents, my brothers, I met my wife when we were 15 years old. And I was really lucky because I grew in the Atleti Bilbao Academy. Then I went to Real Madrid Football Club, which is the best in the world. And when you have that education and that formation and everything as a person, it's difficult to change. But it's true that I'm not the same coach as I was when I arrived to Middlesbrough. Because, for example, I didn't make the first mistake that I made in Middlesbrough when I said that I was there to get promotion the first day, and all the pressure went to me really quick.
Yeah. You've not made the same mistake at Birmingham then? Because this is a club where there has been pressure on managers. You're not a crazy man, Ito. You know the circumstances at Birmingham. Is it a little bit calmer there these days? Have you negotiated a sort of longer term to build the base you want at the club?
You know, it was a really nice surprise when the CEO called me again, because I felt him completely different. And he told me, the first thing that he told me, that he had learned a lot in these 3 years. And more than a coach, he wanted a partner to work with him. And since I arrived here, I am really, really pleased, as I told you, because the things are going really well. Obviously, the results always are important, but everything that he told me that meeting is taking place now, and we are good working together. We've brought a few players here. The atmosphere is different, knowing that it's going to be a tough league, because this league is always difficult. But again, I felt him completely different, and someone who has learned from his mistakes.
Yeah. One of my favorite things I learned about you when you were at Middlesbrough was somebody told me you would send back scouting reports if they had a spelling mistake, because you wanted to instill a culture of excellence. Are you still that hard taskmaster, Ito? Are you still that much attention to detail?
Yes, because I think to build something, and I did in Middlesbrough, and I was trying to do in Forest or here, is you need to bring the right people. And to bring the right people, they need to be hungry, they need to want to build something, they need to come here knowing that they can be part of a good period in the club, because I don't want to bring players because they are earning a big money, or because they are going to come in because Birmingham is a big city and they are going to have a comfortable life. I think it's the same example as me. When I went to Middlesbrough or Forest, or I came here, is because I am hungry. I want to do something nice in the club.
Yeah. You love a clean sheet, don't you? I don't know if you know your stats, but I've got this record for you. Okay, you've been in charge for 171 championship matches and you have kept a clean sheet in 77 of them. Look at the smile on your... I can see you while we're doing this. The smile on your face says it all.
No, because I am smiling because always, or most of the times, is the people... links the clean sheet with being defensive. And I said after the game last Saturday that for me, clean sheet means commitment. And when you have a clean sheet, is because you have 11 players on the pitch and another three on the bench who are going to play later on. And then they are going to be committed on the pitch, and they know that every single ball is important, every single detail is important. And when you finish those games with a clean sheet, it's because you have been committed on the pitch, you have been supporting each other. And then when you have the quality up front, and when you have the fitness that we need up front, we will score goals for sure, because again, when you have players with quality, the teams will score goals. But at least when you don't have that quality, or when you are not fit enough to compete since the beginning, at least to keep those clean sheets means, for me, again, commitment.
I have not mentioned the word defensive at any point in this interview, as you well know.
I told you.
Now, on a serious note, can we talk about COVID? Because circumstances seem to be changing again. We're now told by the government that it's unlikely that we'll have supporters within stadiums for the whole of the winter, could be 6 months. I mean, just how much of a challenge is it, Ito, to look after your players, to look after the people at the club, to look after yourself, and still be committed to producing a quality football team in the current environment?
I think we are, or we should be, the best example for everybody, especially in this moment where when everybody is living a difficult situation. I think everybody should look after yourself, because everything starts with this one. And then as a football team, as a football club, we need to show that we are committed, we are training, we are going home and we are coming back, and we are looking after ourselves first. And then knowing that they can't leave their homes, they can't go to the stadiums, the best way to keep them happy is to be committed on the pitch, to do our 150% for them to be proud at home, because it's the only way that we can keep them happy and we can keep them proud of their club, because I know how difficult period for everybody is this moment, so we need to be the best example for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, how much have you had to adapt your own communication from the technical area without any supporters in? Because in the past, the supporters create the atmosphere, creates momentum, helps to motivate the team. So have you had to change your messaging to try and get that extra 5-10% out of the players?
Look, in this situation, you can find good things, especially bad things, because the main thing is to have the crowd in the stadium, because it's that 12th player who are always supporting the players, even in the worst moment, and nobody can do it better than them. But on the other hand, I like to take always something positive, and you know, at least now we've been working here for 1 month and a half, and with the empty stadiums, I can communicate with the players during the games. It's easier to communicate with them, because when the stadiums are full, it's impossible. So always you are losing and winning, and in this case, obviously we are losing more than winning.
You got any more young players coming through? We've all loved seeing Jude Bellingham develop, and he went before you arrived. Are there many more in the system?
Difficult at the moment, especially when you compare with Jude. Jude was amazing, and he is, and he will be even a top player. So now we have to be careful, because every single comparison with him is difficult. We need to work. We need to try to find not just one, two or three, but it's gonna be difficult.
Jose, your great mate Jose Mourinho, has he got any spare players at Spurs he can lend you just before the window closes?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. But let's see. Everything can happen in football, and even more between friends.
Yes, I think you're right. Aito, what an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I just wish I'd rung you and said, can you bring your Peaky Blinders cap? I tell you what, if you win promotion this season, will you wear the Peaky Blinders cap in the celebrations on the bus going around Birmingham at the end of the season? Yes?
Yes, but don't put me that pressure this year. I can do it next year or in 3 years. But if I get promotion, don't worry that I will celebrate it with the Peaky Blinders cap.
Very good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on the Official EFL Podcast.
Thank you very much.
The Official EFL Podcast with Mark Tate.
So let's try and reflect on some of the EFL's other key stories, and indeed look ahead to the coming weekend's fixtures with a man who I cannot believe recently celebrated the 10th anniversary of his joining Southampton, where Nigel Adkins inspired one of the most dramatic rises in recent memory. And I'm guessing, Nige, that is the one moment from your management career you'd like to wrap in cotton wool and put in its pyjamas.
You're right, Clem. It's one of them when you actually, it's 10 years... just gone 10 years, and you look back, you reflect, and you think, wow, what a fantastic journey that was. What an experience. We met so many great people. To go from 23rd in League One after having 14 years at Scunthorpe, remember? It was a special time at Scunthorpe. And then you go and join Southampton, 23rd in League One. We 51 places, we rise. We get to 15th in the Premier League. We've got two back-to-back promotions. We've had a pathway for the youth. We had great role models, the supporters, the community, everybody's together. Special, special times with special, special people.
Is it tougher, do you think, a decade on to be a manager? I mean, you've been very qualitative in your approach, very plucky in deciding to leave Hull, taking your time to find the right opportunity to come back in? I mean, aside from COVID, have conditions got a lot worse out there?
I think what you find now is the term manager is probably going away, where a manager would normally beforehand maybe I'm picking the players, the recruitment side of it. It's gone away from that now, where you've got more, the owners are paying the money, but they'll bring, if you like, agents in or directors of football, and they recruit the players. And then the term manager's now changed to head coach. And you're basically right, well, these are the group of players we've got. You go and perform to how we want to go and perform. And if we lose some games, you're out. But you might not have wanted these players or the recruitment strategy in respect of, do you not understand that this player and this player, they're not going to work together? The unbalance of the squad. So that has changed in a big way from maybe where you look at Sir Alex Ferguson and Wenger, who've been there for many, many years. I'm sure they had total control of everything. More and more now that the head coach is that. He's the coach of the team and maybe hasn't got any say or very little say on the recruitment of players, which is the biggest thing when you're putting players together. You know. And if you want to be there for a long, long time, you have to accept that but work together with it.
I mean, we've talked a lot on the latest developments in COVID. It sounds like a ridiculous question, but to an extent, if you had to have a time out of the game, would this be the time to do it? Or would you prefer to be in the thick of it, trying to manage in these extraordinary circumstances?
I'd love to be involved, but I'm trying to be involved in a different way where you're still trying to help people. You know, I still pick the phone up. There's young coaches, there's young players even experienced coaches who are out of the game, just to pick the phone up to them and just speak to them and talk to them and share experiences and knowledge. It's challenging now as well because you want to go and watch games of football. You want to go into training grounds. But because of the COVID situation and the testing situation, you can't. So it's an interesting time. It's how we deal with it. It's how we embrace the challenge, embrace what's going on, not lose sight of the fact of how can we keep developing people. It's about people. It's about relationships. How can we keep that all together? And it's about keeping a football club in the local community. You meet up with your mate on a match day, you have a beer with your mate, you talk football, you talk life, and then you get on with the other part of your life with your family, if you like, or your working week. If we haven't got that back, it's going to be such a challenge for everybody because it's integral to the way we live.
I mean, it's a kind of microcosm of society though, isn't it? That there will be lots of older people that have had to shield and not getting the sort of socialisation. They just want somebody to put their arms around them. There are going to be businesses who, after 6 months of struggling through this the first time, are going to be affected by football not being back amongst communities, and maybe some of them will shut the doors. I suppose the unique insight you can give us, if I might, is pre-management. Obviously, you had those 10 years as a physio. I mean, what will it be like at the moment to be literally so hands-on with the players, but the very opposite of what we're all being told to do, which is not to touch anybody and not to get in? I mean, how on earth does that knit together, Nige?
I suppose it's an interesting thing as well, because obviously you watch the things on the telly. I went to the game, I did a game at the weekend on commentary and watched the way people interacted. And you watch the way people from opposite teams, you know, that they shake hands and whatever, but when you're treating a team, you've got your own bubble, if you like. You're used to doing that. And everyone was getting tested. That bubble was getting tested regularly. So the Orient game this week got called off because they hadn't got tested. The West Ham, the manager and two players were tested with COVID about an hour and a half before the game. They've had to disappear. But the Hull City players didn't. So it's an interesting dynamic on the actual testing side of it. Going back to your question about being hands-on, I'm sure you will have in your mind, ooh, do I want to be touching this person? Should I be close enough to him? The only way around it, I suppose, is if you are having regular testing. It's an interesting quandary that we've all got. However, we can't just disappear and just not do anything.
Yeah.
It's a real difficult balance we've got.
It is. It is. No doubt about it. Listen, you very kindly agreed to help us to have a tiny quick look back, but also look forward to the weekend's fixtures. And I suppose we need to start in the Championship. Reading lead the way after a couple of games. Have you still got your finger on the pulse of what's going on there at one of your former clubs?
It's great to see that they're up there. How long that lasts for, obviously, I was there several years ago. Great to see Michael Olise score at the weekend. You know, he's a young lad. He's my son's a coach there. He coached him when he was under 15. Then my son went to the Premier League, but he's gone back as a coach now. So it's great to see him. But I need to highlight, it's fantastic. Eamon Dolan, God bless him, he's no longer with us. What an influence he was at that football club, and still is when you look at the players who are there now still. there has to be a pathway through from the youth team to the first team. Eamon said to me, we're here to energise you and we'll energise you with players. And he was brilliant for us. And we had a constant theme of young players that would be available coming through. And even now, I look at it, even still now, one of the starlets at the time, I remember he was under 10s. And I go and watch the youth team on a regular basis on a Sunday morning, the 14s, with a prime team. We went the Youth Cup, the Night Cup at Wembley. And you look at Dejan Tekic. He was going to be a star even then. And Eamon made me make sure I had a little chat with him and this, that and the other. And he's going to be one for the future. But then you've got like the likes of Tom McIntyre now, who's in there, who's playing well. Tom Holmes in the first team. Luke Southwood, for example, he won the World Cup with England as a goalkeeper. He played in the League Cup game the other day. Rob Shea's the goalkeeping coach there for the youngsters all the way through. It's great for him to see that one of the players he's helped develop through his pathway and his career over 10 years be involved in the first team, having done it ever so well. So there's a raft of players. But you need good role models at your football. Wherever you go, the younger players to see and aspire and understand this is how you should train, this is how you should do things. And I think that's important to every football club.
It's wonderful to hear your passion for the trajectory of those young players and just keeping tabs on where they are, having seen them at an embryonic age and following their flow through. In League One, I mean, I don't know what you spotted, but I loved the 4-4 draw between Wimbledon and Plymouth that ebbed and flowed Wimbledon's first game at Loftus Road. And I wanted to ask you about Peterborough beating Fleetwood, because when we went into the 90th minute, Peterborough 1-0 down at home to a flying Fleetwood. What happens, Nige, to inspire a turnaround like that where those two late goals from Peterborough give them all 3 points? What goes on that makes that happen in football?
We've always said that even at 2-0 down, you're still in the game. Because if you get one back, then all of a sudden you're in the momentum then. You're chasing. You've got an opportunity. The team that were 2-0 up and now all of a sudden it's 2-1. They're thinking, oh, we might just throw this away. And you hear the supporters. We talk about getting the supporters back in the crowd. There's nothing better there. If you've been chasing or a team of 2-0 up or 3-0 up and they get pegged back and it's, you know, the supporters can really have a great time of giving some banter out. But stay in the game. I always remember this, stay in the game. So even a 2-0 down, you stay in the game. Something might just happen. And for Peterborough at home, it's a good victory because I think they're going to do all right this season. But Fleetwood have been off to a great start. Touching back on the Wimbledon game, when we talk about players that we've got, it was great to see. I mean, obviously, Wimbledon are getting a new stadium now, so they played at Loftus Road. But it was great to see Niall Canavan score for Plymouth. Now, we talk about players. So, Niall Canavan and Matt Godden, who scored for Coventry the other night. So, Matt and Niall, we gave debuts to at Scunthorpe all them years ago. And it was great to see that Niall gets on the score sheet the other night. And what was probably a very exciting game to watch, 4-4. That's what you want. You want goals. You want goals.
You are like a walking encyclopedia. And also, you're just a perfect picture of how we all watch football in different ways and spot different things. Let's switch to this coming weekend. And my eyes are drawn in the Championship immediately to a bit of a, do I want to call it a pressure point? I mean, listen, neither Huddersfield or Forest have got off to a great start, have they? The Friday night game.
Both of them poor starts. You look at Forest, really, they threw away a great opportunity in the playoffs at the end of last season. They needed to get off to a good start now. Did they have a long enough break? But they haven't got off to the best start. Huddersfield changed the manager. He was with Leeds United in the setup they had there. So he's been given his new opportunity now. What did Danny Cowley do wrong and his brother? Owners come in. They've got their own way of wanting to do things. What's Danny done? What they've kept him up, probably getting ready to get ready for this season. So that it is. It's going to be interesting how the owners go, hang on, we've got off to a bad start. We want to get ourselves promoted. Unfortunately, in football, the guy in the dugout is the one who quite often is the one who gets moved on and somebody else comes in for a fresh impetus. So that'll be interesting to see how they go. I'd like to see Fraser Campbell start a game and get on the score sheet because, as you said, Fraser was great for us. He's a Huddersfield now, Huddersfield lad. He knows where the back of the net is, so if he plays, he'll get a chance. And hopefully Tommy Elphick starts to recover. Again, we took Tommy Elphick on loan when we were up at Hull City. He went back to Aston Villa. But I knew he picked up a real bad knee injury early on his start at Huddersfield. So hopefully he's getting back to a level of fitness. But it's always more challenging the older you get, as we all know.
Yeah. You talked about changing managers. I mean, I'm looking at Watford against Luton, and they could have been two divisions apart had things gone differently, last games of last season respectively. But Nathan Jones returning to Luton gets the win over Derby, 100% record. Just one league defeat since the restart when he returned.
How can it be Nathan Jones, who's done absolutely unbelievable at Luton, he gets his move to Stoke, and it goes horribly wrong for him?
You tell me, Nige. How can it be?
Expectation will be far higher at Stoke than what it is at Luton. So there's another side of it as well. The expectation of where we should be. Dealing with players who have probably got bigger egos. You always want them young, hungry ones. But sometimes you've got these players who are on massive amount of money. Big, big squad of players. I think that was one of the issues. And I think he's gone down the line of performance and culture, which is correct. But along the line, you've got to win some games of football as well. So I think given time, the culture would have got there. The group and dynamic that he had, he said himself, I think publicly, that he had to move a lot of the players out. But unfortunately, when you go in and you've got players on three-year contracts on big, big money, you can't move them out. So you've got to work with them, and over time you can move them and get the best out of what you've got. They didn't win any games. I remember we played Man United in the FA Cup. Go back to Southampton. Early on, we played him in the FA Cup. We were in League One at the time. And we wanted to work on a formation, and we did a diamond just to get better. So we had a plan B, if you like, moving forward. And after the game, I spoke to Sir Alex, because I'm always asking opposition managers and coaches questions. I said, go on then. Besides winning football, what have you got to go and do for the longevity of management? And he talked about, obviously, you've got to look after your health and stay with the latest trends and have a hobby outside of football and keep moving your coaching staff around. But I said at the beginning, besides winning football, because we know you've got to win football. And that's maybe where it didn't work out for Nathan. So we go back to Reading. I went into Reading. The Russian owner brought us in, Anton Zingarevich. And he wanted us to play like we had done at Southampton. But I said, listen, you've been equipped to the recruiter to play one way, which is under Brian. They've been very, very successful. You're going to have to change it around. I ended up having a conversation with Sir John, fantastic guy, Sir John Medeski. I said, go on and Mr. Chairman, words of wisdom, vastly experienced chairman, can you give me some advice? And he said, it was quite simple. I don't know anything about football, but if you lose six games, you get sacked. And that's where it is. Do you know what I mean? So it's a results-driven industry. However, to get your results, you've got to focus on performance, you've got to focus on culture, you've got to focus on recruitment. You've got to focus on entertainment for the supporters you've got. And I've learned that. I've gone out of football a little bit, and I'll go and watch games of football. And I'm sitting there thinking, tactically and technically, this is brilliant. They're playing out from the back. Me and Crosby, we go and sit at the back of the stand at the Kop and watching, you know, Man City playing out, or we'll go and sit in the corner flag. This is brilliant. And then I'll sit on my other cheek and I'll just go, right, I'm sat here now as a supporter, right? Tactically great, but I'm bored silly. I want a bit of go-mouth action. I want a bit of oomph. And I've learned that over the years. You know, maybe I've wanted to play the perfect game, but, you know, we always look at stats. I've got a great book I read a while ago, The Numbers Game, and a lot of goals come from mistakes. And you want to... How do you create mistakes? You want a bit of chaos. Liverpool do it great. They get the ball forward as quick as anybody, and they're reacting for quick things and mistakes and things that go on, getting the ball forward. Because ultimately, us as fans, we want to be entertained as well.
No, but it's really interesting to hear that an experienced manager actually bears in mind the fact that however much you're changing things for the long term, every three games you've got to put 3 points in the bag, and also is mindful of the supporter experience. That's the true caveat, is it, of somebody that's been around the block a few times?
Yeah, I think you're trying to do big picture thinking. You want to have a pathway for your own to come through, because one, financially, that is better, but you're developing with a culture that you've got. What does a Southampton player look like? What does a Reading player look like? I've used to use them as two examples, right? Because we've just been talking about them. What do they look like? So there's a culture. You know they're going to work hard. You know they're going to be well coached. They're going to be part of the team's the most important thing. And they are going to make sure that they embrace the community as you're part of the community. And have that you'll go out and you'll be an ambassador throughout the community. But when you've got people paying hard-earned cash to come in to watch a game, they want to be entertained as well. You've got 90 minutes where you can have a chat with a mate, but They want to have some form of entertainment on the field of play. Yes, you've got to win some games of football and play a way that people can identify and be, this is our club. We might be getting beat, but this is our club, and we know they're doing everything they can. So for me, that's the whole package that you're looking for.
Oh, my goodness. I could talk to you for hours and hours, but we're going to whip quickly into League One. Another 100% as we've got Lincoln entertaining Charlton on Sunday. We've got Ipswich against Rochdale, but inevitably, your last club is the one I want to concentrate on. Northampton entertain Hull City, who, let's be honest, had a wretched back end of last season, but have got off to a good start this time around.
Excellent start. Grant's had a challenging period. Obviously, they got off to a half-decent start, but then come the January window, the wheels fell off, and they just, once you get on that downward spiral of losing games, it was difficult for them. However, they've started well this season. They've recruited a lot of players that are probably suited for the level. They've seen different things. They've had to cut the budget accordingly. They're going to have a tough game at Northampton. Again, we talk about players you keep an eye on. Sam Hoskins, a young player I gave a debut to at Southampton, he's scoring the goals at the moment for Keith Cale's Northampton side. So Bull City will go there full of confidence, I would imagine, because, again, Wilkes scored a good goal late at the death. They've been scoring early on in the game. So Wilkes has been a player that they brought in who scored some goals for them. And I'm really pleased to see them get off to a good start this season.
And in League Two, the 100%ers are Cambridge, who entertain Tranmere, and Port Vale, who entertain Harrogate. And I was very, very sorry to read, obviously, of Macclesfield's winding up. But I was also extremely sorry to hear that Mac legend John Askey, who's now the manager of Port Vale, had got caught up on that list of creditors and is owed such a substantial amount of money, Nigel. I mean, you know, he's obviously given his own, I know we're talking Port Vale here, but he's given his all to Macclesfield, league club, obviously, last season, and he's got caught up in the whole thing.
It was a real shame. It just shows what a precarious situation that we all are in. John's obviously gone to Port Vale. I think he's been there for 19 months now, and they've got off to a great start this season. You know, I don't think they conceded a goal yet. So they've got a great... But it just shows sometimes the good guys need a little bit of help as well. And unfortunately, it hasn't worked that, you know, we talk about the finances there. It's going to affect a lot of people. But it's nice to see, on the positive, it's nice to see he's got off to a good start and he's doing such a good job down at Port Vale.
Yeah, and Mark Bonner as well. First job, first management job at Cambridge, and you can't do any better than win 5-0 in your first away game, can you, at Morecambe, and obviously entertain one of your former clubs in Tranmere.
Yeah, we want Michael Jackson to do really well at Tranmere. Mark Pallias, an old teammate of mine at Tranmere Rovers all them years ago.
That's a very long time ago, Nigel, isn't it?
Long time ago, 1980 or 1981.
Oh, my Lord.
I was a young 17-year-old, Colchester United at home. As a 17-year-old.
Wow.
But they were great days, absolutely great days. I was a young apprentice and fantastic. But they are, and you want young managers to do well. And you want your managers to be able to have a situation where I'm going through a difficult period. Can I phone somebody up? Have I got somebody I can speak to in confidence who isn't after my job, but I can actually just blurt some stuff out to, get off your chest and just try and say, have you ever been in a situation? How did you deal with it? You know, your health's an important thing. A lot of times that you can get so embroiled in it that you don't know whether to stick or twist. And sometimes you just need somebody just to take you out of that situation and just look at the big picture, calm you down and just go, you're the one, you make your decisions. This might work. Don't tell them what to go and do, but just maybe guide them a little bit and just know that they're not on their own, because being in that dugout's a lonely place. Because at the end of the day, that decision is down to you. Being a number two is totally different from being a number one. Because when you can offer advice, but ultimately when you're the number one, your decision goes and your head's on the block. And sometimes you need somebody who's maybe not your number two, somebody is distance away, who can maybe just put a different slant on it, a different pitch on it, and give you somebody to speak to in confidence, without the threat of, I'm here to take your job. Because sometimes that's happened over the years in football, hasn't it? He said, here's a sporting director. No, all he wants to do is have your job. So you lose that rapport, if you like, which is invaluable. If you can get that right, where you've got somebody who can actually assist and help, who coaches the coaching?
Exactly. It's a lonely place at times, isn't it? Well, I've got to ask you, you're a beacon of inspiration. I know on Twitter you do little videos occasionally. You've got your hashtag of Breakfast with Nige, and you're always just trying to repeat messages of positivity to keep people going. There will be people struggling with this period that we've been in for 6 months. Looks like we're going to be in for the foreseeable future. What's the key to trying to stay positive, finally?
Listen, we're all unique. We're all totally different. You know, we're all very, very lucky if we're healthy. Health is wealth, as you say. We're very, very lucky. We are all facing all the football community, the world community. We're all in this together. And we've all got to find a way to help each other get through this difficult situation, this challenging situation for all of us. What the answer is, nobody knows. But obviously, if we can keep ourselves in a situation with getting the social distancing right, washing our hands right, getting our face masks on, and just being responsible. If we can all do our own little bit, that's what we can do to help. If we can do that, we can be positive about the future that we're going to look forward to. But if we can listen to the EFL podcast once a week, the dulcet tones of Mark Clement, looking forward to the games at the weekend, then I'm sure that can put smiles on people's faces as well.
Oh, bless you. What a joy listening to you, Nigel Adkins. That is it for another week. A huge thank you to Nigel and indeed Ita Karanka. If you've liked what you heard, then feel free to give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share the podcast on all your socials. A reminder, if you want to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. And we'll see you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.